Well, you know, terms are sometimes used differently. The same term is sometimes used differently by different thinkers, so it can be complicated. For instance, the names of the Lataif are sometimes exchanged one for another in the old Sufi writings. Or one author uses one word to designate a certain plane, and for another author, that word designates actually a different plane, or a plane that comprises subplanes of which one is the one that the other means by that term. So, just to keep that in mind, you'll actually find that, I should tell you, in comparing Pir Vilayet's and Murshid's works, they use the names of the planes differently. So, I'm trying to clarify and simplify things. I think it's easiest just to go back to Murshid's use of the terminology as he used it, but then you can take the things that Pir Vilayet was describing and plug it in to that model. It still pertains. He was listing more planes and using the terms in a way that was specific to his system, but everything that he described can be fit into the more simple model that Murshid has given, as long as one sees that each of those planes can be expanded. For instance, classical Sufi spoke of, you know, there's an earth and a heaven to each plane, so there's at least a dual dimension in each plane. So I just wanted to mention that because we are making an ascent through the planes. And so Malakut in Murshid's use of the word refers to the mental sphere, which is really the plane of the jinn. And it's there that this double appears. Then Jabarut is the angelic plane. And that's where the soul alights into the uniqueness of its destiny as an angel first, and then descending into Malakut as a jinn. Whereas Lahut is the plane of the archetypes and of the Ruh al-Qudus, Holy Spirit and the Spirit of Guidance, and then Hahut transcends manifestation. So there's a basic, simple topography which matches the soul whence and whither, which is our fundamental map. So, we're working our way up or back. Of course, we speak often using the metaphor of up, but that's in some sense metaphorical. The reason the metaphor suggests itself is because the ground is hard and the sky is subtle. And so the sense of movement towards subtlety is suggested by upwardness. But of course, the sky is also under the ground. So there's a movement toward increasing vastness and subtlety, and then a contravailing movement toward incarnation. And alchemy is the reconciling of those two directions through fana and baqa, through Solvay and Coagula. So now we're coming to the next marriage. We spoke of three marriages. The next marriage, the first, you remember, is the marriage of the nafs and jism, the mind and the body, which produces the hamta, or the double. And that's the body one wears upon death. That becomes one's body upon death. And death is called the lesser resurrection. And then there's a barzakh. And barzakh means the interval. Interval between the lesser resurrection and the greater resurrection. And during that interval, one is working out one's furtherance, as Moshe describes so well in Soul, Once, and Wither. For instance, unresolved matters here are resolved there. Unfulfilled desires here are fulfilled there. So we're seeking to die before we die, but what unfinished work is yet to be finished there. And then comes the greater resurrection, the cosmic resurrection, where all are summoned forth, and the trumpet of Seraphiel is blown. And that's a further beyond the barzakh, beyond the lesser resurrection and the transformation of the barzakh, then comes the greater resurrection. And all of these three weddings correspond to these events, eschatological events, which can be foretasted according to the admonition. Mutu qabalan tamutu, die before you die. So, all right, so we've come to the, and in each case, it's a pyros gamos, that is to say, contraries in their interaction give rise to something further. That's what the whole manifestation is about. You know, for purusha and prakriti, spirit and matter, and this develops through, yes, first the marriage of mind and body, and then producing the double, and then the double becomes a unit for a marriage. Vis-a-vis what? Well, the nafs is at the level of malakut. So what is at the next higher level, at Jabarut? There you have the ruh. Now here again, the problem of terminology. Murshid uses the word soul, but that word has been come to be used to mean the psyche, which is the nafs. Books and books about the care of the soul, and it's really about the psyche. Also, nafs is, even amongst ourselves, sometimes we use that word in too limited a way, too negatively. The nafs is not bad, inherently bad. Sometimes, anytime anyone mentions the word nafs, suddenly one thinks of something terrible. The nafs is, you know, one's mental system. And it's got its habits, including bad habits, and it gets, disoriented, moved by feelings of abandonment, overcome by all kinds of impressions that lead to all kind of counter-reactions and so forth. So it's a ball of confusion, but it is resolvable. And so there's the nafs al-mutmainah, which is something quite exquisite. It lives in the garden in Malakut. So anyway, nafs is psyche, but not soul. Soul is, the way we use the word soul is ruh. Other traditions in using English might use the word spirit for what we call soul. They call soul the psyche, they call spirit the ruh. But we're calling it soul. So we just have to understand what we mean. When Moshe uses the word spirit, there are a couple, two different ways he uses that word. One is the combination of ruh and nafs. And also, most essentially, as the ruh al-Qudus, which is really the spirit of guidance. And that's at the level of lahut. And that's, we'll come to that, we're not there yet. So for now, we've come to the hamta, the double. That is, you know, there's a mirror. The imaginal world is like a mirror in which the states, the impressions, the experiences of this world are impressed. But a physical mirror is a thing, and there they're just impressed without substance. And that's a whole world of substanceless forms. And one of the forms, the form that is proper to ourselves when this physical body dissolves, is that form which is results from our experience of having lived in a flesh and blood body. The manner in which the nafs has inhabited the jism is perpetuated in Malakut as the body of the hereafter, as our double, and already foreshadowed in our dreams. So then you're living in Malakut, in the double, as your body, working out unfinished business and so forth, or already, I mean, you're living in that now, in dreams and reveries and so forth. And then, well, there's a certain disconnect there. As long as that body and that existence remains unacquainted with the ruh that precedes one's incarnation, one's luminous identity, and so one is in limbo, as it were. But what exalts, what ennobles the dream body, or rather what I should say, produces out of it something further, something more, is the encounter with the soul. One's own soul. So the groping in the hereafter, the dream body becomes more and more apprised of the soul and is drawn to it, and a conjunction takes place. Now, perhaps the most beautiful expression of this is the a beautiful story, the story of the hymn of the pearl. You know, the prince who is sent by his parents to Egypt to go pluck the pearl under the sea, guarded by the fierce serpent, and he goes, and I won't go into all the details, but you can, if you're interested, of course you can read the original, but you could also read a gloss that I made on that story in the book Mingled Waters. So I won't go into every detail in that story, is a clue to the path. Every single detail. There's nothing arbitrary in that story at all. The prince travels to the seashore, but then he becomes befuddled. He eats the food of the place and becomes intoxicated and falls into a deep slumber and forgets his whole mission. And reclines in utter torpor. He was waiting for the... I won't tell the story. So, but his parents don't forget him. He forgets his parents. They don't forget him. They send a message about his task. He has to fulfill the task. The task has everything to do with our task here in this world. He succeeds. He fetches the pearl. And then, but even before he reaches home, he's met with an emissary of his parents who bring forth the robe that he is meant to wear, the robe of splendor. And it unfolds itself, and it comes stands before him, and he stands before it, and he sees himself in it. It isn't just something to wear. He sees, this is me, and I am it. And it rushes to him, and he rushes to it, and it enters him. That's what we're talking about right now. The encounter between the soul, the ruh, and that effigy of our earthly existence that is called the double. When in that encounter, that takes shape, which may be called the body of resurrection. The body of resurrection is gestating in the hereafter, in Malakut, to take its place in Jabarut. And it won't appear merely on the strength of the workings of the Hamta, the effigy, nor does it come spontaneously and unilaterally from the Ruh. It comes through the encounter between that, let's say, harvest of earthly experience embodied in the Hamta, coming face to face with the pre-incarnational Ruh that has been, as it were, waiting in the heavens. That's the second marriage. Producing the body of resurrection. So let's close our eyes. First, we have to identify the parties of the marriage. So, first of all, looking slightly upward, we evoke the soul, the Ruh, which has preceded our incarnation, which is a portion of primal consciousness, as yet only vaguely, only gently differentiated from the Great Spirit, the Holy Spirit. You might say a ray that as it radiates, differentiates itself gradually, but in substance, it's changeless. The differentiation is only subjective. So that spirit that has met with impressions not only in this physical world, but even before coming to this world, because as the soul has ventured toward the earth, it's just like traveling overland anywhere. Now, air travel is different, but traveling overland, you come closer and closer. If you travel from Richmond to, well, let's say from New York to Texas, you'll see accents are changing along the way, gradually. And the weather is getting warmer, and the vegetation is changing, and so forth. So it's the same coming from the primal source into manifestation. It's a gradual acculturation into the human experience, preceding one's birth and conception, and already unfolding in Malakut. But before the soul has reached Malakut, there's only the softest, the lightest touches on its identity. There's a passage, a memorable passage in Milton, where the angels are marveling at human lovemaking and said, for us it's different, that love's among the love of the angels, lovemaking of the angels is like breeze upon breeze, not like bodies colliding. You know, where does one begin and the other end? Angels are like that, they're just like breeze upon breeze. Well, here by the seaside, the breeze is taking on a lot of moisture. It's a humid breeze, so already you can see air has become laden with water, and that's suggestive of the soul's taking on of impressions, a certain heaviness, and that just keeps intensifying until we find ourselves in a condition that we experience as very dense, constrained, bounded, contoured, giving rise to a whole construct of self. So, just as it were, deconstruct all of that and resume the condition of freshness, abstraction, with the least imaginable markings of identity. Yeah, some predilection towards individuating, but still a very nebulous, very abstract, very simple. Perhaps the best word is simple. A very simple nature. Cosmos had said that when consciousness, when intelligence is presented with an object, it becomes consciousness. So we're talking right now about just the very beginnings of consciousness. There's intelligence, is the intelligence of the Ruh al-Quds now just starting to touch upon consciousness, because they're objects, but the objects are by no means so objective as is the objectivity that we attribute to objects here. Just a kind of most universal apprehension. Thinking in universals insofar as there is thought, rather than particulars. Kind of acquaintance with the archetypal ideas in their most abstract geometries, as yet unfleshed. That's the consciousness of the Ruh. Kind of pristine absence also of the what successively becomes an acquaintance with guilt and shame and all of the symptoms of limitation. So certainly innocence is prevalent. But even to speak of innocence is to speak of a contrast between good and evil, and there's no contrast, there's nothing to be innocent of. So the rule, orient to it, and we can just, while orienting this way, say, who? Oh, 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 oh. So it's the Ruh seems to be looking down toward our incarnation from above. But then looking up from having gone through the incarnation, having actually been born out of that, and making its way up, but sometimes by confused circuitous routes, is the double, that dream body born of our body and mind. But it's working its way, and it's looking up now, looking up toward the Ruh. So we look toward the Hamta, toward the double, toward that effigy of our physical existence. And again we say, Ho. Now what happens when these two opposites converge? What is born in that marriage? That which precedes our human birth and that which results from our human birth, returning to what precedes incarnation and meeting it. How is the Hamta transformed, or more accurately, what is born from out of it, what arises from that encounter? We call it the body of resurrection. We anticipate it, and see it's already dawning, that robe of splendor. So we turn to the middle between the Roa and the Hamta and say, Hai. So those are the elements of the practice, and now we'll actually do it. Turning up to the Ru, Hu, down to the Hamta, Hu, and in the middle to the body of resurrection, Hai. These are the divine names. We're invoking the divine to enfold and protect and bless these processes with which we are involved.
Oh. Oh. Oh.
and we invoke the molder. Yabari, 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 Yabari. And three breaths of shavalo, either listening to the inner sound, or if you are visually oriented, then look for the sliver of a crescent moon. The stars, the seven stars have formed a crescent. You see that crescent now. Three breaths. Three breaths of shakal. Now the sliver of the crescent moon is waxing to become a quarter moon, quarter full.
Illallah. 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 The three breaths of Shavuot, visualizing a half moon.
Allah.
3 breaths of Shalom as the half moon waxes into a full moon.
We rise for the evening prayers.